Whether it's structured or unstructured, we're learning every day. But we absorb new information so much better when we're in the right headspace. That means we can't be stressed and we need to be in the best environment. We also need to be interested in the topic and then implement the new learnings in order to create new neural pathways and make the information stick. If you're still wondering why you need to take care of your well-being to improve your performance, then you need to tune in today's episode with Catherine Hume. With over 20 years experience in HR, she knows what business owners and teams need to excel. Let's get started. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, a bubbly, driven, chocolate-obsessed, positive thinker and action taker who helps business owners just like you overcome their fear of failure to step up and show up in the scary online world. Because I know you have a message that needs to be heard, and I know you want to make a big impact on the world. By becoming more visible in the online space, you can attract and retain your ideal customers. I can help you do this by putting together effective and engaging marketing strategies and copywriting at right time marketing. So feel free to book in a free 15-minute chat with me after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today, I'm joined by my guest, Catherine Hume. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks so much, Leanne. Thanks for having me.
Very welcome. I know that Catherine's been listening to my show for a while. We worked together in the past too, and it's been a long time coming, this interview. So very excited.
Me too.
So just to let you all know a little bit more about Catherine. So she has over 20 years experience in human resource roles across a range of industries. She started as a toddler. And, and most recently, she's been supporting strategic workforce planning in New South Wales Health to ensure we anticipate the future health needs of our population and build the workforce to ensure we can continue to deliver a quality and safe service. Love that. But apart from HR, Catherine also has experience in economics, learning development, and mind-body medicine. So this experience, combined with her research into neuroscience, cognitive science, and behavioral science, has all led to Catherine developing the Holistic Learning Program. And that's a program which offers a learning solution that explicitly teaches us what's happening in our brain when learning occurs, enabling us to gain an appreciation for how our health and well-being helps or hinders the learning process. I want to just delve into that quickly because I think that sounds really cool. It's very much like if you aren't your best self, then you're not going to take in more information. That's just in anything, whether it's personal life, business, corporate, or whatever.
That's right.
So can you just explain that a little bit more about how the program works?
Yeah, because I found that being a mum and also in the business that and the experience that I've had, I think a lot of the time we assume that people know how to learn, and it is because it is an innate human skill that most of us do learn without intentionally doing it. But I think as business owners and in the competitive world that we're in today, it's just so important that we're able to intentionally learn. So identify what it is that we want to learn and then put in plans to make sure that that happens. And I'm not sure that we all know how to do that. And even if we do, I think there's still opportunities to say, okay, what's the latest research? What are other people doing? And just experiment and see what works for other people, what works for me, and then incorporate that into our lives.
Yeah, because if you're under a lot of stress and you're like, oh, I have to quickly learn these processes. I mean, look, I'm thinking back to when I was in like year 12, and you just don't absorb that information if you're under stress and pressure. But if you like your teacher and it's kind of bit of like, it's fun. It's put you in a fun way. You absorb it so much better than when you're maybe bullied into it, pressured because you have to. Just think about some teachers here.
But you're absolutely right. So you have to be intrinsically motivated. And when you are, I mean, all of us would have something that we're passionate about, whether it's, cooking, whether it's some sort of sport, whatever it is, we will all have a vast amount of knowledge about a particular subject. And that will be not because we sat down and read a textbook, but because we love it. And because we love it, we want to know more, and we incorporate that into our brains with the existing knowledge, and we just continue to build on that. And that's what it's all about. And I think what you're talking about, Leanne, is that, you know, external motivation doesn't actually always hit the mark. And so what I like to do is go back and say, hang on, people, we're running this rat race. We're all so busy. Let's take a moment to just reflect and slow down and say, what is it that really matters to us? What is it that we care about? And how do we develop our capabilities to ensure that we can achieve that? Because that then builds this enduring cycle where we then achieve that and we feel good because that's purpose. And in doing it, we're working with meaning. And learning then becomes easy. It becomes, you know, something that's part of the day, and we seek opportunities to learn as well. And we seek out people. So your social networking groups and your meetup groups are great examples of opportunities to go. And, you know, we are humans. We're meant to be social. And that's a great opportunity to go out and say to people, this is what I do, or what do you do? Ask questions, be curious, be courageous, and really create new knowledge together. And, you know, we do learn by doing that. So let's do it in a way that's enjoyable and fun and effective.
Yeah. You know, because I learn, like through my podcast, I absorb the knowledge from people having interesting conversations by, being curious. And I also enjoy reading. So I also absorb a lot of information that way. But for me, quite often, if someone presented something to me, I quite often, unless they gave me, so if for example, if I sit in on a webinar and it's all just fact, and there's no opportunity for me to do any exercises, I don't absorb anything. It's just in one, you know, in one ear out the other, in one eyeball out the other. I have to then, because it's been presented to me, I have to then either have a workbook to then write notes down. That's how I learn. It's all different learning types, obviously.
Yep.
So a lot of my marketing knowledge is thanks to talking to people, and because I'm interested in it, it's funny how quickly that information absorbs when you have that interest.
But it's also because you've got those existing mental models in your brain that the new information can attach to. So that is the learning process, where we're assimilating new knowledge with existing knowledge all of the time. And there's a limited capacity to do that. So that's called our cognitive processing. And that is really, you only have about 20 to 30 seconds to do that. So if we try and attach new information to something that isn't already there, then it's going to be difficult. And that's why we have to take those iterative steps. Like we're on a journey, we learn a little bit all the time. And I think I love your call out around, unless you've got a workbook or unless you actively process that information. That's exactly right. You need to apply that in some way. And what we do as business owners and employees is, if we can incorporate that into the work that we're doing and transfer that, then it becomes part of the flow of work. So we don't actually have to separate training or learning opportunities from what we're doing in our day to day. And we can identify those opportunities and reflect on those. And I think what I can help people with, like, I'm wondering how many of your listeners actually actively try and incorporate any of the information that you share intentionally. I'm sure that we do, but whether or not it's a matter of, what are some tips that I could give to people to say, what might you do with that information so as it adds value for yourself and those people that you care about?
Yeah, I mean, you just made me realize, you know, all those conferences and things that you go to, and you get information overload, and you never action a thing. I mean, look, that's an instance where I do take heaps of notes, but then in that moment you're feeling inspired, and then the next day is back to business as usual and you don't implement any of it. Mm-hmm. So therefore that learning does not actually lodge deep into your brain. It's just surface level that will eventually disappear. And then you That's probably right. pick up that book weeks or months later and doesn't make any sense because you didn't take the time to make it actually process it. But yeah, I love the whole learning process. Very cool. So yeah, can you just give us a little bit more about your business journey? How did you come? I mean, obviously it's from the intro, you've got a very wide background with the research you've done and the HR. Just share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So I started this business, so my consulting business, that is, in 2001. And that was after being made redundant from a financial organization and having that little bit of a buffer where I had a little bit of money as a safety net. And what happened at the time is I was really lucky because other people in that organization were also made redundant at the same time. And they spread their wings and went to lots of different organizations. And they heard that I was going out and trying consulting. And they actually, the word spread that I was doing that. And I automatically had all of these clients, which was just really, really fortunate position to be in. So really it's just grown from there, and my assignments tended to be long-term, so I didn't have to be constantly searching for new clients. And over that time, you know, I had four kids and running a consulting business really worked for me. But what I always needed to do was ensure that I was able to add value for my clients, because that was how I earned my income. And if I wasn't able to perform at my best and be, you know, consultants are brought in for a reason. They need to have that extra bit of capability, I guess, to be able to hit the ground running and add value straight away. So I didn't have the opportunity, or I'm not sure what the word is, but I wasn't able to relax, I guess. And so as a mum of four kids, it became really apparent quite quickly that I could really come unstuck if my well-being wasn't up to scratch. And so I really had to start prioritising that as well. And it really became evident to me. And then I became really interested in that, in, well, what's the impact of health and well-being when we're trying to learn? Because I was all about getting people to perform and helping them learn so as they could perform. But I could see in myself that I couldn't perform if I was, you know, if I'd had a sleepless night, or if I hadn't had time to have breakfast, or if I was worried about, you know, that I might get a call from preschool, or all of those things that play on your mind. So I really had to develop intentional strategies that I could pick up straight away and just, you know, bring myself back into a position where I could actually offer that client what I said I was going to do for them. And so that, I guess, is where I am now, and in a really nice position where I've got this great job. And but I also want to say to people, you can do this too, and it doesn't have to be hard, and you don't have to spend 20 years researching and experimenting. And so I've just developed this program. So it does teach the skills, but it also simplifies it. So what I've done is create a whole lot of cards. So there's just these little postcard size things that you can take each week, and I can help you work through which ones might work for you, and just experiment and say, I'm only going to try up to three. And when I apply these, I'm going to evaluate their effectiveness for me. And if they're worthwhile and sustainable, then I might keep them. But if at the end of the week I find that that wasn't either worthwhile or sustainable, then maybe I'll pick another card. And it just has to be as simple as that. And I think
can I ask, what kind of things are on the cards?
Yeah, great. So, and these are things that I do. So there's standard things that people would have heard. So there's a food one. So the cards are broken down into four things. So one is about energy. So we need to be motivated to perform. We need some level of motivation. And if we're feeling tired or lethargic, there are things that we can do to boost our energy and give us that quick, and it doesn't have to be caffeine and it doesn't have to be chocolate. As much as I'm with you on the chocolate thing, yeah. There are alternatives, because as we all know, the chocolate thing is great in the moment, but then we'll find a slump at some point and it will have its negative impact. But I mean, there's time and place for everything. So there's an energy card, but each of the the card packs have, you know, a food element. So the energy card for food talks about omega-3 fats, for example, and says that if you eat things that contain omega-3s like chia seeds and walnut and salmon, that helps with those stimulate your brain, and it gives you those healthy fats in your brain to help with that energy and to optimize those neural pathways and those electrical and chemical signals that are being sent in your brain. And then there's more alternative things. So I did certificate 4 in kinesiology a couple of years ago, and that's focused, I've got a basis in Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine. So there's things around like acupressure points. So if I can give you an example for energy, the base of our foot has an acupressure point that is really grounding. It's called kidney one. And if we press on that, it brings us back and centers ourselves. So even in the in my day-to-day work, if I sit with a golf ball under my feet, it actually can be quite energizing because it rubs on that acupressure point. So these little tips that, you know, health and wellbeing can seem overwhelming and people will say, I don't have time to do all of these things. So I've really tried to bring in some tips and techniques that you can just incorporate into your day. So that's the energy pack. There's also a calming pack because, you know, we have to reach this optimal level of between calm and energy. So if we're too stressed, we can't perform, but equally if we're not stressed enough, we can't perform. So we've got to be able to reflect on how we're feeling, have that self-awareness to be able to identify how we're feeling, and then utilize these techniques to bring us back to balance. And then focus. Once we're there, then we have to focus, and that's really hard in today's world where our phones are dinging and you know, people are calling and emails are notifying us, and just there's so many things on our plates. So the focus cards are really just about simple techniques that you can apply to say, because we all know multitasking reduces our capacity, our brain's capacity. It leaves residue, it slows us down, but we all still do it. So these focus cards are simple techniques to say, what are some of the things that you can do? And they're applicable. So I use them for kids, I use them for adults, I use them for myself. And they're visual reminders and they're quite attractive. So you can stick them somewhere to give yourself that trigger. And it's all based on behavioural psychology to understand why we behave the way we do and how we can design our environment to influence that. So as the positive behaviours are emphasised and we do those more, and the negative behaviours are we reduce that.
Yeah, so you can kind of pull the cards. All right, so say it's the omega-3 thing. Go, all right, well, am I incorporating enough omega-3 in my diet this week? And kind of reflect, all right, maybe I need to play around the pressure points, and that will so kind of, I guess everyone's going to find different things work at different times based on where they're at. Exactly. And is it so I guess it's particularly important to be mindful of these when you are under pressure. You do have to you're growing in your business or something, you're stepping out of your comfort zone, mm-hmm. and you have to be more mm-hmm. alert. Yep. That's probably the time to be more mindful of all these different aspects.
Yeah, and they're great in the moment, but there's also things that you can do to be proactive. So as business owners, we all know confidence is key. It's so hard to keep putting yourself out there, and if your self-confidence is not where it needs to be, it's really hard. And it actually, that fear can be so overwhelming that people might actually say it's too hard. So things like positive affirmations, there's cards that have got a couple of positive affirmations, and that, if you know, put it somewhere where you, maybe where you're brushing your teeth or next to your bed as you're going to bed each night. And you could do it for your kids as well. Like you can have it in their diaries that they take to school, or the other thing I've got
boxes.
Is
I've done that for my daughter. Your lunchbox.
Yeah, beautiful.
You're going to be great today when she's got a speech
great.
On.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Yeah, that's so awesome because we need those reminders. And the other thing I've got is I've got a couple of essential oils that match the cards. So you like kids can take them to school, we can take them for the workplaces and just put them on our pulse points. But also, you know, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm pretty confident that as parents, we'll all know the scenario where we've tried to help our kids study and it doesn't go down too well and it ends up in a bit of conflict. So what I've tried to do is think through, okay, what are the things that we can do as parents to support our kids' learning that they don't necessarily need to know about. So having essential oils burning, for example, is a great way that we can actually be helping their brains without them knowing, making sure they've got the right amount of water, making sure they've got enough sleep, that they're feeling safe. You know, that we do exactly, I love that example about the positive affirmations, all of those things that we can do so we don't actually have to be encroaching on their space and coming to them and saying, what are you doing? Are you studying? Because that's just an extra bit of pressure. You know, how can we show up for them in a way that's actually working with them, not just putting an extra bit of, you know, an extra thing on their plate?
Yeah, so it's like creating the positive environment for it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't put too much pressure to clean their desk and their room, because maybe they may work better with that. But yeah, feeding them, supplying the right foods at dinner time, just giving them that peace and quiet. If they got noisy younger siblings, for example, keep them away, just so you can just create the right headspace and space for them to then really concentrate.
And one of the things we do in our family, my kids are older now and they'll roll their eyes if they ever hear me talking about this outside of our home, but we take 3 deep breaths before we eat our meals. So often we are so busy that our systems, you know, our digestive systems are running fast too, and they actually don't absorb all the nutrients in those meals. So even with the best of intentions, we're feeding them healthy food, but they've just come in from soccer training and, you know, they've got to run to the next thing. And so they're sitting down and we're sort of throwing a plate of food in front of them and they're eating it in front of us or wherever, maybe even in front of something on a device, whatever. And they're not, their bodies actually won't be absorbing it as much. So if we just take the time to slow down, three deep breaths is all it takes, three slow deep breaths, it just resets our brain and says, you're not in fight or flight mode at the moment. And what it does, so if I can go a little bit into our brains are still very prehistoric. It hasn't evolved very much since we were hunters and gatherers. And we still think that a threat, any threat, is a threat to our survival. And our brains tell our bodies we need to escape that threat. And so what it does, it diverts all of the energy, well, not all of it, but a lot of energy to our extremities, to our muscles in our arms and legs, so we can run away. What it does also is it says you don't need your brain or your digestive system at the moment because the priority is for you to escape. So it shuts down those systems. And so, but our brain isn't smart enough at now to understand that this threat isn't a physical threat. It's a time pressure, or it's an exam, or it's a assignment at work, or it's a deadline. Our brains don't differentiate. And so this constant stress that we're under means that our bodies are constantly in this state of stress, so we're not digestive and we're also not thinking clearly enough. And that's why it's so important that our health and well-being is maintained and in balance, so as our brains can function for us and our digestive system can also, and our bodies work much better for us.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's two things I want to bring up from what you just said there. One was absorbing the nutrients. And see, I have this thing every now and again where I'm so thirsty, no matter how much I drink, I just can't quench that thirst. My body's just not absorbing the fluids. I've been to a kinesiologist who said, add some salt to it. Yeah. Salt to the water. And then I'm like, okay, it absorbs. And I wonder if it's, I probably could probably pinpoint those times to when I have been under stress or been quite busy. And say, you know, run down as well. I know I'm like, I mean, eating healthy foods, why am I feeling run down? Well, maybe because the nutrients haven't been taking in. And with the fight or flight thing, I mean, I quite often lose my shit at the kids.
Yep.
And it's almost like an out-of-body experience watching myself do it and go, I can't control it. Like this morning, my four-year-old just really like, I just lost it and I just picked her up and carried her and a bit aggressively. I'm like halfway because I'm trying to be mindful of this going, wait, stop. So instead I sat her down on the stairs, that's right. And I said, okay, you don't want any of the options for breakfast. You can't have shakes for breakfast.
No.
Let's talk this through. And then in the end, it turns out she just wants something different. So raspberries and toast that has peanut butter, Vegemite and Nutella on it.
Yeah.
And butter, like whatever. Okay, so she wanted a variety, something different. Cool. So when you can be conscious of it, but I could in the past, I have completely lost it and I would just put her in a room, close the door, stormed off, screamed, because that's kind of like the fight. I need to fight you. Yep. I need to get like, you're in my, I can't deal with you.
She's probably mirroring your stress. And so it's just this cycle, which just keeps getting on top of both of you.
Yes, actually. So that brings me to the next question, because with those that have staff, how can we support like our current staff, future staff members to make sure they reach their full potential?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I have been in that instance where, I've had a manager who's been stressed and her manager's stressed. Mm-hmm. And so that stress is put onto me. It's like that circle of stress. I would love to hear your thoughts on how we can help people be their best self in our offices.
Yeah, great. Look, that's probably an episode in itself because there's so many things that we could do there. One of the things we need to be really aware of, the first thing, I think most things, is mindfulness. So if we are aware, so you said it yourself then when you picked up your daughter and you had that moment of awareness, and up until that point, it was almost like you were on autopilot. What you described, it feels like it's happening, but it's not within our control and it's almost not even us. So that mindfulness. So there's actually studies that show this Harvard research conducted in 2010 shows that there's 40% of our time we're actually not aware of what we're doing. So imagine if we can bring that down to 40%. So even just that extra 7%, imagine how much, like, so in our days, and imagine if that was time with your family where you're now getting 7% more mindfulness. We don't have a lot of time with our families and our loved ones. So imagine if we can make more of that. And I think these things are just awareness. Your point about your daughter and, you ended up coming to an agreement because you understood what she wanted. I remember when I had my second child and I was trying to bath my elder daughter, and it used to be a fight every night. And someone gave me a book and it talked about give them options. And it's really funny because what I ended up doing was to get her in the bath, I'd say, do you want to take your skirt off or your shirt off first? And that was empowering to her because she still had a choice. At the end of the day, she was still getting in the bath, which is what I wanted, but because I gave her those choices. And it works for us as adults as well. But back to your question around what can we do in the workplace, that mindfulness is absolutely critical, but it's also being aware of these behavioral responses that we have. So if someone's stressed, that's on an energetic level as well. And so we need to be able to differentiate ourselves from another person's energy. So if someone else is stressed, we need to not take that on.
Yes,
and we need to be really, really. And that, what I talked about in the beginning about really having understanding of our own purpose, if we're really clear on that, then we're less likely to be influenced by other people's agendas. And this is where I really want to empower people to take the time to clarify that purpose, because once you have that, it's like your magnetic north or North Star. People call it lots of things, but it's if you know where you want to go and that that's important for you, then it's harder to get pulled off course. Whereas if you don't have that end in mind, then if someone comes and wants something from you, which we're all going to have happen to us all the time, it's going to be hard to say no because you don't know why you would be saying no. Whereas if we've got that value proposition in front of us and we're true to that, we're going to be a bit more resistant. That's a couple of things that we can do for ourselves. We can't control the way other people treat us, and we need to accept that. We need to understand what's within our control and work towards that, put our energy into that, because the things that are outside of our control can absorb a lot of our energy for no benefit. But then there is that middle ground of things that we can influence that sometimes we feel aren't inside of our control, but they actually are. And I think that probably that example with the bath is a good one. But even in the workplace, you know, the same thing applies. And being able to identify, okay, my boss is stressed, I can't go and say to that person, you shouldn't be stressed. Like, that's one of the worst things that you could do. But maybe you could say, would you like a cup of tea? Or and, you know, something to help trigger them to go, oh, someone's got my back. Because often that stress is that sense of, I've got too much time. It's too much to do, and I don't know how I'm going to get it done. And something as simple as offering someone support. You're offering a cup of tea. You're not offering to do the job for them. You're showing them that you're there for them, but you're not taking on the responsibility for it also. And so that's how we – and then there's lots of other things around working in teams and making sure we've all aligned and we all understand our roles and we all know how to support each other and communicate. And there's all sorts of things around that as well. But I think for this episode, the important thing around performance is just that, knowing what your purpose is, sticking true to that and doing the best that you can. And you know, at the end of the day, knowing that you were true to yourself, you were doing the best thing for you. And there's going to be mutual benefits for that as well, because you're going to then work in an organisation that benefits from what you do. And so we're contributing value to something bigger than ourselves, and that feeds back into our well-being as well. Anyway, there's lots and lots and lots of things to do. And that's why I kind of came up with this program with all of these techniques, because not everything's going to work for everybody, and so it is an experiment. So it's more just throwing out ideas and getting into a social environment with peers, people facing the same challenges, so we can talk together and say, you know, learn from each other, iterate on what we do, and continually improve just in these small but sustained ways.
Yeah. So if you, you're saying being clear on your message and vision, everything, I think it's so important to make sure your team are all aware of it as well.
Exactly.
So then everyone's on the same page. And so then if you do need to upskill your team in a particular topic, if you kind of explain, all right, this training comes into this, this is why this is important, it kind of gives them a reason to pay attention.
Exactly. But
what are your thoughts on, when it comes to training staff, like what are your little tips? Is it always best off-site so that it's away from the usual distractions? Is it better on-site because then it's their familiar environment, they're more likely to embed those new skills into their everyday life? Just throwing this out there to you, what are your thoughts on that?
It's really contextualized, that question. So it would really depend on the scenario, what the training was, like what the skills we're trying to develop, if they're completely new skills, if it's team building, you know, it really is hard to say.
Team building's better offsite, isn't it? Because it's kind of like, this is more about us communicating better. So those fun activities like escape rooms, that makes more sense.
And what that does is, so we create scripts in our mind. And so if I said to you, what did you do on the Thursday last month? You would find it really hard. You'd probably have to go back to your diary and say, what was it? But if we were on an offsite that day and I said to you, what did you do at the offsite? You would be able to remember that very clearly because it's off script. It's not the same routine that you did every day. And that works. That's why you'll get to the end of a school year and you'll say to the kids, what happened throughout the year? So, I was a teacher for a while. And it's a bit devastating as a teacher because they'll always say the things that weren't part of every day that you put your heart and soul into. You know, it'll be the excursions, or it'll be the some day that some other funny teacher came into the class, or it'll be some performance that someone did. But it will never be the stuff that happened every day because it doesn't stand out. So to create those really powerful memories, then we need to change the script. But if it's something that we want to incorporate into every day, then that's back to the small but sustained incremental improvements that we just blend into what we're doing. And just those things, funnily enough, we actually don't even notice ourselves getting better. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love sometimes is when you're in a new job and you feel completely out of your depth, and it doesn't matter how good you are at your job, you feel like you know nothing. And then someone else starts after you. I love that because someone knows than you.
You know, yeah.
And that, but up until that point, you felt like you didn't know anything. And yet now you've got something to compare to, and you can say, oh, that poor person. But I tell you what, most of us are really willing to go and help that person in that scenario because we've got knowledge, and as humans, we really love to share it. We love to show what we know, and it's just part of being a tribe. It's back to that hunter and gatherer thing where our survival in a tribe, we were reliant on others to support us. So it wasn't like today where we are competitive with each other, and worried about if we do something to contribute to someone else, they might be now more valuable than us. And I think if we go back to those human basics of helping other people, I'm sure your audience are all here already, helping other people is what is how we grow ourselves. And it's better for us because we feel part of something, but it's better for the people that we share it with. But we also benefit because they then share with us, and it just creates this enduring cycle.
Yeah, and you just from what you were saying this before just brought up a memory for me. And so I'm with the local business chamber, and when you first join as a new member, so a little bit of that sense of overwhelming, I have no idea how this whole thing works. We do some training, and it is how to network basically. And I joined, it was like November 2018 or something when I did this. But what stands out is the role plays we did, because there were funny role plays about what you do if you approach a group of people and someone ignores you. How do you deal with that? Then we all kind of have a laugh when everyone gets their phone out and someone's there trying to make conversation and half the room knows what's going on and that person has no idea. So that kind of stood out, and I'm now running these training sessions.
Oh, wow.
So I did my first one recently. And so, in the feedback forms, thing that stood out was the role play, because it was a very fun way to learn different to what off script, I guess. And what also from that experience my initial experience was that tribe building, because there's people you're in the room with learning for a few hours. And then I'd see them at future networking events and I kind of would move towards them because I had that sense of familiarity, like kind of got to know them. And it was back from when we were both at base one and we had no idea what we're doing. And then I spoke to someone recently, and just hearing how far his business has gone since when we started together in that initial group, it's very cool. So that tied in a few things you said there about the tribe building, as well as doing something off script really then sticks with you. So I guess role playing, I think that works for probably most learning types, just because your body's actually doing it, or same as if someone's teaching you, you physically do the process and then it absorbs into your brain from actually doing it.
So what you're describing there is experiential learning, and that's what I'm talking about. So learning in the flow of work. So it would be really hard, for example, to teach someone to play the guitar or learn to play the guitar if you didn't pick up the guitar. And your question around, should we learn off-site, and why I was hesitant to answer that, well, it really depends. If it's something that you have to do in your day-to-day job, then taking you away from the workplace wouldn't work. But team building, you were right, it's good to do it that way. So it really, and that's where context matters. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you mentioned around that role-playing is most people actually don't enjoy role playing. It's out of their comfort zones. They feel like they're on stage and feel like people are watching them, and they're not sure. It's a new thing to them most of the times, and it's just uncomfortable. And that's actually where learning occurs. If we stay in our comfort zones, we just keep doing the same thing, and we actually don't grow. So one of the cards that I've got is actually find comfort in discomfort, and it's about just understanding that when we're uncomfortable, that's actually usually a good thing. It can be a good thing, and that's where awareness comes into it as well. We need to be able to identify the difference. But that's a really critical part of learning, is just that discomfort. And the other thing that you mentioned, one of the reasons that you will remember that, there's this guy who I met in London a couple of years ago called Nick Shackleton-Jones. He was presenting at a conference, and he's a phenomenal human being. But his learning theory, he's a professor, and his learning theory is based on the premise that every time we learn something, it gets stamped, if you like, with an emotion. And so when we retrieve that memory, we retrieve the emotion with it. And so you talked about earlier about the experiences that you were reflecting on with teachers that you liked, for example, that's going to be a pleasurable experience. What you learnt then will be stamped with a positive emotion. So I remember my economics classes in high school, loved that teacher. It was a fantastic experience. And I can to this day remember all of those things, not probably all of it, but a lot of what we learned in those lessons. Whereas, English wasn't my strong suit. And so most of that, because I relate that to a negative feeling, I don't necessarily, not consciously, but I don't necessarily want to go back there, so I don't. So if we can make learning a positive experience, and that's why I want to alleviate the stress of, study at home and things like that for kids, because it's just going to detract from learning. And yes. So this, and same with in the workplace, we have to create positive cultures in the workplace, and that's going to be good for the individual, but also for the organisation.
Look, this is also where positive reinforcement versus punishment mm-hmm. comes in. I feel like I learn and want to be my best self when I'm given words of encouragement versus you've done it wrong. Because mm-hmm. if I get told, and this is what has happened in the past for one of my workplaces, barely any positive reinforcement. It was like, oh, good job. And they would kind of be skimmed over, something you did well. But how about all these things you did wrong with that, wrong? And what do you walk away focused on? The things you did wrong, you made embarrassed in front of your friends. I guess being mindful of that, going, all right, can do a bit of the positive sandwich or whatever, going, you did this well, maybe improve on this, but good work, And so people like walk away going, all right, it was constructive criticism, I can work with that. And then you're probably more willing to learn from that manager going forward, because you feel more supportive rather than criticized and not good enough. Because every kind of negative comment you get will make you go, oh, should I even bother with that next time? Oh, I won't do it. I'll procrastinate because I did it wrong last time and I got in trouble.
Yeah.
Versus I was told that I was almost there. I just had to do X, Y, Z. And like, cool, I can do that. Or if you're told, that's the best report I've ever seen, you're going to go, cool, I have to keep up that momentum now and I have to always create really great reports,
Yeah, because you feel good. When you achieve something that matters to you, you feel good. And that what you're talking about, there's a really good big push in organisations today for psychological safety. So ensuring that people feel that there won't be negative consequences unless they do something like blatantly wrong. Life is learning. And so in organisations, we're trying to identify that the difference between high stakes tasks and low stakes tasks. So as those low stakes tasks, we have a bit of leeway to not do them extremely well. Because if we know that there won't be a negative consequence, we'll feel safe enough to give it a go. But to your point around, if you fear that there's going to be a negative consequence, then you might actually just not try in the first place. And if we go back to that whole, you need to move out of your comfort zone to grow, if it's not a safe environment, then you're not going to feel safe moving out of your comfort zone. And this is where we can do it in our workplaces, we can do it in our homes, we can do it with our peer groups. When I run these workshops, it's a really reinforced, it's a safe environment, because otherwise we are already restraining the potential that we could have for learning in that scenario.
Yeah, I love this conversation about learning. as a lifelong learner, as I call myself, it's one of my strengths in the Gallup strengths test, and learning is fifth one. So I'm always open to that.
Awesome.
So we could keep going, but time's running away. So I just want to ask, what are some steps our listeners can action all about the learning? I know it's quite a big question, but even just from some things you've said today to improve their own learning strategies or their staff? What can I take
from today? So one of the things, probably reflection, I'd say would be one of my top ones, because we don't actually do it. I'm generalising, and I'm sorry if you're listening and you feel like, yes, I do, but it's not something that's commonplace and it doesn't take long. And so whether it be in the car or on the train on the way home, or if it's when you're cooking your meal, if you get, when you're going to the toilet, it doesn't take very long. Writing it down is really helpful, and it also is helpful because, you know, in a couple of months' time, you can look back and just remind yourself of that, and it's really good because you can then reflect on, oh, yeah, that happened, and I've come a long way since then. But just that in itself can trigger what occurred, and it works for kids at school, it works for kids, us in workplaces, it works even in our, you know, our daily lives, in our relationships and things like that. The other thing which we spoke about is mindfulness. If we're not, you know, attention is critical. The whole learning process starts with our sensory input. So we've got these five senses that are bombarded with information, and our brain is acting as a filter. And what it does is, unless we pay attention in those first 2 to 3 seconds, that information will be lost because we can't possibly consume it all. So we need, the first thing we must do is pay attention, and we can only do that if we're mindful. So things like meditations, visualizations, getting control over our thought processes is key to being able to learn. And then the other thing is developing the ability to learn, because the ability to learn enables us to get better at getting better. So it's like the key to being good at whatever we want to do. And it is a skill. Yes, it's natural, but it is a skill that can be developed so as we can actually optimize it and, you know, become all we were born to be.
Yeah, awesome. I love that. Thank you. Very, very cool. So I always ask my guests this, and it is, how do you take care of your health and wellness?
It's all in these cards. That basically, I have spent all of this time looking after my own health and wellbeing. I have to do it intentionally. I know I put a lot of pressure on myself. I've got that awful person in a voice in my head who's really nasty to me, who I really have to fight all the time. So I walk every morning, and usually I'm very fortunate that my husband will come with me, and we do it in nature, and I really make the effort to pay attention to the sights and the smells and the sounds, and do a bit of yoga, do a bit of Pilates, play netball socially with my friends, which is really good for my soul. So I'm very fortunate that I really like healthy food and don't drink alcohol. That's not a difficult thing for me. So I'm very, very lucky in that respect. And don't make it too hard for myself. Just make it blend in with life.
Yes, I love it. I love it. That's very full. Like, yeah, it's obviously a big part of your life, the whole managing the wellness thing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And how can people connect with you?
So at the moment, LinkedIn, but you are going to help me with my social media. So whenever people are listening to this, I am going to set up a Facebook for Holistic Learning Hub. LinkedIn, Catherine Hume.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Catherine. It's been a great conversation.
I've loved every minute. Thanks, Leanne. I loved it.
And thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find the show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating and review by your podcast app or at ratethispodcast.com/marketingandme. If you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn. Just search for Leanne Shelton and let me know you're a fan of the show. You can also find me on Instagram under LeanneShelton247. Or, of course, you can book in a free 15-minute chat, because I'd absolutely love to chat about how I can help you grow a thriving health and wellness business. Until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.